Dungeons and Crusaders, you are now listening to Vox Arcana, a production of Hollow Street Media. By the will of the immortal Emperor of Mankind, it has been decreed that the following broadcast of Vox Arcana may not be suitable for all ages. The views expressed on this Voxcast are solely those of the individual providing them and do not represent the opinion of this station, website, or any affiliated partner. Audience discretion is advised.
Attention on the battle fleet. This is Captain Ramaskos of the Imperial Star Cruiser Vox Arcona. Please listen carefully to the following announcement.
In accordance with the Codex Astartes, we hope that you have a productive trip to Arcona and arrive with the will to deliver the Emperor's judgment. Thank you.
Greetings, Crusaders! Welcome to Vox Arcona Mission 25, recording Sunday, November 15th, 2015, and coming to you from the Battlefleet Charon in the Segmentum Obscurus. I am Katsu, and I'm pleased to share the fleet's Vox Relay with Gigabyte. How are you today, sir?
I'm not too bad, thank you very much.
Awesome. Well, we are here, Katsu and Gigabyte, that's us, to discuss with you the awesome world of Eternal Crusade and the 40K universe as a whole. Super happy to be here. I'm super happy to be sharing the Vox Relay. It's been an awesome, productive, non-work week. It's so awesome. Like, you know, like the last 2 weeks we've both been kind of running around like crazy, and I finally managed to have a day where it's just like, I've been going on 4 days where I'm just like, and I'm done. I'm not gonna worry about crap anymore. So it's been pretty good.
I'll bet.
How about you? What's going on?
Yeah, not too bad. I've had today off, thankfully, so I've been able to just take it easy with the fam. I've been killing a few people in game and been playing on a bit of Lotro as well.
Nice. Yeah, it's been a couple of days since I've been able to do Lotro, because there's been another game that came out recently, and I've been touring the wastelands, building my settlements, and
yes,
yeah, it's great. I went from Middle Earth to Victorian London to pre-Third War Boston. And now I'm back to the Charon sector. And it's been an awesome tour. It's been pretty good.
Nice.
Anyway, so, it's been great. But I have managed to get some time in. I did not get a chance to see Into the Warp, but I was busy playing and having a great time. So I didn't, make too big a deal about the fact that I missed the video. So, let's get straight in. We did not have a new Grand McNeil story, so sigh. And I meant to tell you something last week, Darren, and I'll have to tell you off air because it's pretty spiffy and it's some stuff I found out.
Oh,
not necessarily relevant to what we're doing, but it's still something cool. Anyway, other than that, there's been a couple of interviews done, but it's all a lot of rehash of what's been going on in the Warp and a couple other things.
Of course.
So, if you're interested in those things, definitely go to the website and check them out. See what you can come up with, and there's a bunch of resources there.
See what you can glean.
See what you can glean. But that brings us to, of course, Into the Warp 41, where we had Brent, Katie, Nathan, and Guillaume. And why don't you mention a couple of things that are going on there, and we'll see if we can pick it up from there.
Certainly. So in the production update, there was a few things I spoke of. One thing I found quite interesting was the reticle is being changed to show when your shot will miss. Brent mentioned that... sometimes, because of the position of the camera, sometimes it doesn't show like when your shot will miss the opponent and when it will hit. And now, when you're facing sort of a scenery, like a wall or something, your reticle will kind of like clip or snap to the scenery.
So it'll give you some kind of indication that you're not gonna.
Yeah. It's a very very slight change, very subtle, but I think it makes the point quite nicely.
Gotcha.
We finally will have an in-game map. So Yay. When you press M, we'll finally have an in-game map.
Yay!
which will show up as a transparency over the action. Which I've been looking forward to for ages, to be honest, because it's nice just to be able to see where everyone is. Especially without dying.
Well, it's important. You know, it's important in any shooter, but particularly, you know, in 40K, like death can happen pretty darn quick. So
just a
it's
bit.
Interesting. It's interesting to definitely have those kind of options in. You know,
definitely. And just off the back of what we spoke about last week, the combi bolter sounds like it's becoming a very useful tool for Chaos in the alpha.
Okay. So is it becoming more of a Well, I didn't get the chance to watch this episode. I'm gonna have to go back and catch up. But like, in what way is it becoming more interesting?
Well, they didn't really go into much detail, but apparently it's being used a lot more than they initially expected. Apparently, Katie really loves it.
Wait, now does she love it more than grenades?
I don't think so, to be honest, because they mentioned, Katie did mention the good idea for grenades, playing hot potato with them, basically.
Can't be grenades.
Can't be grenades, yeah, exactly. She was saying, oh, it'd be a good idea to, you know, have someone throw the grenade and then you catch it and throw it again and play hot potato with the grenades.
Okay.
I think that'd be quite interesting, but I think it'll probably explode in your hand when you first grab it.
Nice. So I do have a question I want to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Can we have custom colors and decals?
Yes. So in the Q&A, someone asked about visual customization. They said the first pass on the system hopefully will be before the end of the year, but that's mainly going to be focused on character customization. Did have a very awesome picture that someone had sent in of Katie's face on Batman, on a picture of Batman, riding a unicorn with the face of Nathan on the side of a rhino, which was funny as hell. I cracked up when I saw that.
That sounds pretty awesome. I didn't get a chance to look at that. I'm going to have to go digging.
Yeah.
I gotta go digging. What I do know, actually, let me back up a little bit to our general quarters instead of into the warp. What I do know is you can go to SoundCloud and you can download parts of the soundtrack now. And I think I'm gonna.
Oh, really?
I think we're gonna have to do that and start looking at changing up our theme music or whatnot.
Definitely.
Because now that we actually have some resources we can play with.
Definitely. So yeah, the picture of Nathan, of Katie riding Nathan. is at about 49 minutes in the video. So if you want to go and have a look at that, go onto YouTube, and at about 49 minutes you'll see that picture. It's quite hilarious.
Nice. So let me see. Let me ask another random, just a question that just it might come to me at some point. So when will the guild system come in? Was that asked this weekend?
It was, yes, again. The guild system apparently is likely to be in the beta.
Can you say that again?
The guild system is likely to be in the beta, sorry.
No! Damn it! You're supposed to be British! You're supposed to say beta!
The beta, yes.
Anyway, sorry.
Whenever that will be, obviously. But the guild name reserve system will come first, obviously, so we'll be able to reserve our guild names. And they said that's likely. The guild names are likely to be part of your in-game handle before the whole system hits the servers. So you'll be able to run around with Katsu underneath which will be Vigilia Mortis, no doubt.
Yay!
Yay!
Good times. Yay, yay.
And last but not least, the last question I thought was quite interesting. Someone was asking, now that the Warriors are in, will they be raising the player caps on the maps, or will they be increasing the size of the maps? And the answer was both. So apparently the cap on players per map will be raised quote-unquote soon, which will be quite interesting. And Brent mentioned the Fortress map, which is apparently incoming, is quote-unquote enormous. I can't wait to play that. That'll be so much fun.
Oh, no. What I've always been a huge fan of is like in Planetside, you can have hundreds on hundreds fighting over a particularly contested war zone or whatnot. Like, don't get me wrong, 16-16 is good, 32-32 will be awesome. You know, this sounds really great, but I can't wait for more. You know what I'm saying? More war. You know, I want to see that dream realized of 100-on-100, you know, maybe not 1,000-on-1,000 conflicts, but definitely, you know, 100-on-100.
Yeah, a good 100 or 200 per side would be really awesome.
Oh yeah, that'll definitely put some oomph in the fight. You know what I'm saying?
Realize Miguel's dream,
right? So that's really what's gone on in the game. I take it the shooting was on point as always.
Oh yes, of course. The battle was pretty awesome in the middle as well. Well worth going to have a watch.
Sorry, I'm going through the people online. You haven't, or people who are listening to the podcast, you didn't get to see that. But just before we started the show, I was demoing our Twitch ability, because one of our goals was to periodically Twitch from the game, like record our podcast while playing the game. And so I was working on that, and things weren't exactly working the way I wanted it to. So I quit Twitching before the game, or before we started recording the podcast, so that I could focus on the podcast. And I find myself sitting here on XSplit going, okay, let me fiddle with this stat. Oh, wait, Darren, stop talking. Like, cause I'm trying to get it where we can show ourselves in game, making fools of ourselves. But you know, for now, so that's where the silence has come from. It's been pretty awesome. But yeah, so that's End of the Warp. We've had a great end of the, you know, it sounds like it was a good episode, and definitely some news had come in through the, you know, via the soundtrack stuff and all. But of course, as you know, we don't just cover End of the Warp. We don't just cover Eternal Crusade. How did you get a chance to get into game at all?
I have been in the game a couple of times this week, but only one or two games.
I have been embarrassed a couple of times this week. Like, I was like, yeah, I got this, I'm on a roll, I'm dead. And so between that and between a bunch of family stuff, I was like, I'm gonna get off here and go do family stuff. And then next thing you know, I'm like, I never get the time to get back in. So I've managed like, I don't know, one or two, you know, like one or two games a day, before something bad comes up, you know?
Yeah. To be honest, when I'm in game, I usually play as tactical. I'm quite a fan of the tactical class. I like running around and capturing the points.
Nice. Okay. So, the problem is I play tactical or occasionally, but really, like, my lust is sorcerer. And the problem is I keep finding myself running into situations where, like, I want, like, all right, I'm ready to go and shoot the things. And then I pull up the gun and I suddenly find myself with no gun because I have a pistol and I'm getting gunned down like a beast. So it's pretty awesome.
Nice. So yes.
So yeah.
What's going on in the 40K universe?
What's going on in the 40K universe? Let me tell you what's going on in the 40K universe. Obviously, it's the middle of November, so like apparently there's a big holiday coming up soon.
apparently. A little bit early, if you ask me, but yeah.
I hate to tell you this, but December 25th comes every single year. It's the same time every year.
It's just too early to start. Everyone's got their Christmas decorations up already, for Christ's sake. Don't you guys have like a holiday that comes before that?
We do. We have Thanksgiving, which is the annual tradition, and I will probably get this wrong, so just go with me here. American Thanksgiving, it is the time, the symbolic time, where the weather finally turns cold and super cold in New England, and suddenly the colonists who came over from Great Britain realized, wait a second, it's really freaking cold here. And then the Indians, who had blankets and food, were like, we could give you this. And they were all like, well, we don't like you godless heathens, but we will take your blankets and food. Don't worry, there are more of us coming. We all keep our promises. You know.
And once again, the American government lied to the Native Americans.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what happened. But I'm looking at the holiday sales here at here on the GW site, and like the painting, I like the Dark Vengeance box with the paint thing. It's the 40K starter bundle, and it's got Chaos Black spray, because I spray base models. Whenever I make models, I'm spray basing. So a black spray base from Citadel. A basic paint kit, like I'm not seeing what's in that paint kit, but and then either the Dark Vengeance box or the Age of Sigmar box, and like I dig that's cool, because one of the problems that you get is, oh my god, there's all this money that you have to spend. It's like there's all this money you have to spend to get into the game, and then you have to buy all the paints. And so this is at least like a pretty good discount that gets you building, I guess. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And that's a good
definitely.
Thing. The other thing that I like is the Crusade case with backpack.
Oh, I was going to say, I love that.
The thing is this. I am personally a huge fan of Army Builder. If we could each do individual... individualized endorsement deals, like I would probably seek out an Army Builder endorsement, because that's just me. But at any rate, the backpack and the Crusade case does look pretty cool. I'm a bigger fan of roller wheels on the bottom for me, but like, if somebody feels like backpack and case is the way to go for them, then that definitely looks pretty cool. And it's got all kinds of Imperial logos and stuff on it, so it's definitely worth looking at if you're into GW branding your stuff, you know?
It looks like a pretty heavy-duty backpack as well, because it has to carry all those bloody codices.
Well, the thing is this. What it looks like is a cloth frame. If you go down to the backpack and battle case, you'll see kind of what it is from the side. It's basically, it's the Crusade case... but then it's got kind of like a backpack frame around it to hold it in place. I'm not 100% sold on that, but I do like the iconography on it, and it makes me kind of giddy.
Well, the backpack piece itself looks like it's got quite a few straps on it. Yes, to carry the Crusade case, but there's an image there of it on someone's back, basically. And it looks like there is quite a few... straps to that.
Actually,
it has to carry around those codices, so yeah, they're pretty heavy.
Yeah. Well, like I said, like I have been known to be not 100%. Ooh, they're selling their liquid green stuff. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm going through the sale. I'm going through the sale pages, going, what can I buy? What can I put on my wish list? So definitely, the holiday sales are obviously getting into full effect. It's definitely worth picking up and looking at if you're interested. Meanwhile, over on Forge World, there are two things that are going on, and the first thing is the Leviathan Pattern Siege Dreadnought. You said you were looking at that. Why don't you talk about that while I look at it real quick?
Oh my god, it's so bulky, it's ridiculous.
Oh my god, is this 30k or is this 40k?
This is 40k. This is 40k.
No, this can't be 40k. This Hang looks on. Crusade.
Hang on. I'll link a picture to you in a sec.
Oh no. See, created in limited numbers in the latter days of the Great Crusade, the Leviathan Pattern Siege Dreadnought was developed in secret on Terra away from the Mechanicum. Bloody, 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 bloody. Hey, download the rules for the product. Let's find out.
Have a look at the Google pictures for that.
It's a heavy support for Codex Space Marines, Codex Space Wolves, Codex Dark Angels, or Codex Blood Angels. So it is a...
It's 40k.
Holy crap. Like, it looks 30... Yeah. Well, that's why it says it was done during the end of the Great Crusade.
Uh-huh.
So it looks 30k. That's the thing. Like, a lot of the older stuff... Well, and the thing is, like, the Contemptor is 30k.
Mm-hmm.
But this looks, man, this looks 40k. You know,
it looks like it's the 40k version of the Contemptors.
Well, the thing, I don't know. See, I see it the other way. I see this looks like a Crusade, a Horus Heresy version of a Dreadnought. You know.
Well, I mean, it's clearly given the weapon options. I would say it's clearly 40k because it's got the options Grab. Of siege drill and siege claw. You also got this Storm Cannon and Grav Flux Bombard.
Well, the Storm Cannon I'm not too sold on, but Grav is 40k. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, fine, I guess.
There's a link in the chat there. If you ever look at that, there's a few Google images of that, and one of them is in a guy's hand. It's bulky as hell.
Nice. Where's that? Where's the other thing? Oh, the bundles. Was it the bundles that you were talking about before?
Yeah, the ultimate gift guide.
Yeah. Where's the ultimate gift guide thing? Anyway,
scroll down
a little
bit on the front page.
Okay, so on the front page of the... This is the...
Forge World.
This is the Forge World site. Give me just a second here. I'm going to show... Leviathan Pattern Siege Dreadnought with the... Oh my god, did you see the one on the front page?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's ridiculous. You should go to the Forge World site, guys, and just look at that, because, oh my gosh. At any rate, so you said down here at the bottom?
No, scroll down a tiny bit. Should say Ultimate Gifts.
I'm not seeing it. They must have taken it down. They must have been like, no, we're not letting this happen. Ah, give me a second here.
There you go in chat.
Okay, so we're going to preface this. Okay, give me a second, because I have to be visibly looking at this obscenity when I tell you guys about it. Okay, so at any rate, on the Forge World site, you can go into their store, and you can go and you can filter products. Now, the very first filter you can apply is the ultimate gift guide. There's the ultimate gifts, and there are only 15 ultimate gifts. Let me see if I can convert this. Now it says delivering to US, so it's quoting me prices in pounds. Oh well. So let's see here. If you are an ultimate Forge World fan, and you are buying, or you are buying for someone who is an ultimate Forge World fan, the number one ultimate gift you could give is a Mars Alpha Pattern Warlord Titan at the bargain basement price of 1,240 British pounds. Or the Mars Alpha Pattern Warlord Titan with Apocalypse Missile Launchers for the bargain basement price of 1,230 pounds.
love it.
And then it goes down from there. There's the Venturi Reaver Titans and the Chaos Venturi Reaver Titans, each at 1,160 pounds. And then there's the Manta at 1,020, the Eldar Spirit Defender Host at 820, the Knights Battle Line Detachment at 675, the Carestus Nightwing at 470, and then it just sort of goes down from there. But if you are looking, like, here's what we said before we started broadcasting. Like, if you want to guarantee the hand of your lady love or your mister or your favorite mister out there, and you just need to have the guaranteed thing to win their heart, then spend 1,240 British pounds on a Titan and put it together and then hand it to them and be like, hey, here you go, don't you love us? put that being said, you still can't have any of my daughters. Anyway.
Definitely, if you want to impress the parents of your prospective partner or...
Okay, let's get it right. If you want to impress the geeky parent...
The geeky parent.
Because then there will be the reasonable parent that's like, they just did what? They did what?
If the mother's not into it, she'll probably be like, what? Shut up. But the dad will be like, no, seriously. You take the daughter, it's fine.
Right. So like I said, geeky guide. That's what you need to know. Video games. I've actually been I haven't really been doing a lot of 40K gaming, although I have been playing Death Watch for a while, like a long while. And then And then Assassin's Creed Syndicate came out, and then now Fallout 4 has come out, and I'm just like, oh my god, I can't keep up with all my games. So I've been doing what I can to keep up with that, but I haven't really heard of new games yet or recently.
There is there's a what's it called, Freeblade, supposedly coming out soon.
I've never liked the Imperial Knights. In my mind, they're only one kind of knight, and they are called Grey Knights. Anyway.
Pretty good, but yeah.
Yeah, right. So, no. What I've been looking at is, I don't think I'll do Freeblade. Like, I'm keeping an eye on, as it stands right now, I am keeping an eye on, I'm keeping an eye on, obviously, Eisenhorn. I'm keeping an eye on...
Armada?
Armada. I'm keeping two and a half eyes on Armada. And other than that, I'm kind of keeping my head down in terms of... Then there's this Eternal Crusade game that I get to play, and it's pretty awesome. Oh my. But anyway, That's it. Really, it for the video games. We haven't had a lot by way of video games coming out because everybody was like, "Oh my god, here's all of the video games," and now we don't have any more video games to tell you guys about. Best of luck, fellas.
It just makes me laugh that really Eternal Crusade is the only 40K video game that's keeping up its updates.
Well, that's because the behavior team has been legitimately really cool about keeping things. Keeping things in check and keeping people in the know,
That's right.
So, normally, well, at this point, we're going to wrap up the show, except normal. That's us normally, recently. Mm-hmm. And it's been a long while. We haven't really taken care of you guys the way that we should. And so, therefore, in order to thoroughly take care of you, we have an Imperial data slate. Dun, dun, dun.
The triumphant return of the Imperial Data
Slate. The triumphant return of the Imperial Data Slate. And we are going to talk about probably simultaneously one of my most hated topics and probably my favorite arm of the Imperium ever. Do you want to do the quote or you want to go into some of the history first?
Oh, I can do the quote. So, as always with an Imperial Data Slate, we open with a quote to do with the particular subject we're talking about. And the quote today is, "We are at war with forces too terrible to comprehend. We cannot afford mercy for any of its victims too weak to take the correct course. Mercy destroys us, it weakens us, and saps our resolve. Put aside all such thoughts. They are not worthy of Inquisitors in the service of our Emperor. Praise his name, for in our resolve we only reflect his purpose of will." Book of Exorcisms, the verses of Inquisitor Enoch.
And we are talking about the Inquisition! Da-da-da-dun! No one expects the Imperial Inquisition! Except, of course, that everyone expects the Imperial Inquisition. See, the founding of the Inquisition is shrouded in mystery, and there are two different stories surrounding its formation. And actually, really, there was one story, and then they decided to write another story when they decided to write novels about the Horus Heresy. So I'm going to tell them both, and we can talk about which one we think is the right one. So the first is that in the twilight hours prior to his internment within the Golden Throne, while Terra lay besieged by the forces of Horus, the Emperor called Malkador the Sigilite the greatest psyker of them all, to seek out men of character, skill, and determination. I believe the exact quote was, individuals of an inquisitive nature.
yes.
And to be tested and trained so that an elite group of investigators could be tasked to discover the alien mutant and heretic. Immediately prior to the assault on the battle barge, Malkador presented 12 individuals to the Emperor, 8 Astartes and 4 humans, whom he had gathered in response to the Emperor's command. The Astartes were described as having cast aside their allegiance to their Primarchs and their legions, who had sided with Horus. Malkador went on to say that they were blessed with paranormal skills which were best suited to combating the terrors that had recently emerged from the warp. Although the identities of all of the 12 were never revealed, it is known that among those individuals were Captain Nathaniel Garrow of the Death Guard, Captain Eachton Cruz of the Luna Wolves, and Sister of Silence Aminindra Kendall. There's actually a couple more. Garrow recruits a couple more. There's an Ultramarine and...
There's a World Eater as well, I think.
Yeah, there's an Ultramarine and a World Eater. We talked about them not too long ago when we were talking about the fact that Garrow got added to the Horus Heresy line. But basically, there's 4 or 5 of Garrow's crew, and then they go on from there. And then the second story is that the Emperor was interred... After the Emperor was interred in the Golden Throne, 4 trusted servants of the Emperor, and actually the source that I read from was 7, gathered in secret to discuss what was to happen next. The opinions were divided. 2 believed the Emperor would return to life. The other 2 believed it folly to interfere in the events that had unfolded. The version I read was 3-3 and 1 walked out. The 2 resurrectionists, known as Promeus and Moriana, left Terra to begin their quest to bring the Emperor back to life. The 2 that remained acted quickly to establish themselves with the Senatorum Imperialis and create an organization to combat the efforts of Promeus and Moriana, and it was from this that the Inquisition was formed. Now, a couple of things to discuss there. In the version of the second story that I have heard, it was 7 people, and they were again meeting in a candlelit room right after the Emperor was put in the Golden Throne. It was reported that the Emperor was healing. It was reported that the Emperor was healing, and they said, "Okay, well, what should we do here? Because if the Emperor is truly healing, then we should unplug him and let this happen, so that we can get the Emperor back. Because the Emperor without the Imperium is nothing, and we need his guidance, especially right now." Well, the dissenters, the let's leave him plugged in camp, decided that what needed to happen, what really needed to happen, was that, because by that point, the cult was already beginning to form around the idea of a martyred emperor, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
And so they were like, no, let's leave him plugged in, because if we leave him plugged in, then we can use this religion to bind the Imperium together in a way that the Emperor was never able to do, because religion, as the as the Laetitia Divinitatis tells us, it binds people in a way that no mortal construct could. So what happened was they decided that they were going to leave him plugged in. And one of the guys was disgusted at this idea, and he's like, no, you cannot separate man from the Emperor. You can't separate the Emperor from the people that he's protecting. And he leaves. And a couple of other people still say that the other half is wrong, but they do agree that this discussion didn't need to leave that room. and so they decide to silence him. And this source that I'm reading from, for the record, is the beginning of the Inquisition miniatures game that came out a while back. The Inquisitor miniatures game?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Now, the reason that I don't dig... See, the thing is this, like... And this is... So that's... So obviously, I'm backing the second story. Because the... Also, because the first story, in my opinion... Like, I get in the Horus Heresy novels, they're kind of portraying the Emperor as, like, supremely prescient. Like, he knows all this stuff that's going on. But at the same time, like, there's a lot of... I don't know. There's a lot of... He's creating this super secret organization to root out the alien, the mutant, and the heretic. Except for the fact that the entire nature of heresy comes from a religious background, and the Emperor is super secular. So, like, it doesn't... The first option, while it is what is being written, that's the part that ultimately screws my side of which one I believe, is that the one that's being written is the first story, that the Emperor is the one that lined all this up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I don't know. I'd be willing. I'm actually more willing to go with the first story myself. The fact that the Emperor tasked Malkador, the Sigilite, to find these men, because obviously the Emperor was the most powerful psyker in the existence of the Imperium. And he must have had some sort of prescience about what would happen should he board Horus's battle barge. And knowing that he would be going to what could essentially be called his death, he would need some organization to follow after him to secure humanity's future and their safety in a galaxy that wants them dead. So I'm quite into that first story where, you know, he tasked Malkador to go out and find these men and, you know, these people that can take over from him, basically.
I guess. It seems weird to me that the Emperor is going to set aside... And this is sad, because I'm a Grey Knight player, right? Or I've played a lot of Grey Knights, and I like the Inquisition. But at the same time, I'm like, really, dude? Really?
But then there's no guarantee that the initial purpose was to quote unquote root out the alien mutant heretic. So I mean, yes, the idea of heresy is based within religion and belief, but there's no guarantee that that was the original idea. If it was just to find men who were of an inquisitive nature, this could have been just the start of a secret police type thing, just to secure the safety in a hostile galaxy.
Now, here's the other thing, and this'll bake your noodle. Okay, so in the second story, it says that four men got together, made this decision, and then started putting themselves within the Senate and working their way into positions of power, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Emperor, going back to the first story, the Emperor wanted 12 humans. And in the first story, we only know about the Astartes. Why? Because this is Garrow's story. It's 8 Astartes and 4 humans. Mm-hmm. So what if these are the same story?
I was just thinking that myself, actually.
You know, because the thing is this. The only problem... Well, no, they don't even say... Because the thing is, there's no saying that these humans, Promius, Moriana, and the other two, there's nothing to say that those people aren't the Inquisition. Aren't those four humans selected? You know what I'm saying?
If that is the case, then the Sister of Silence, Amandira Kendall, would also be one of the four humans.
In which case... And aren't the Sisters of Silence the beginning of the Sisters of Battle?
No.
Are they or no?
No. The Sisters of Battle were the Brides of the Emperor.
Okay.
They were a cult that came about during the Age of Apostasy and the Reign of Blood.
True.
The Sisters of Silence, I think, were... I remember the story. They were psychic blanks, I think.
Okay, gotcha.
If but I remember rightly.
Well, but the thing is this, that would make, if she's human, then that would make Kendall, then that would make Kendall one of the four. Specifically, that would make her one of the ones that decided to silence Promeus and Moriana and form the Inquisition, you know?
That's right.
So, interesting.
Interesting indeed.
Ah, but... what we do know is that the Inquisition was formed, and the Inquisition formed itself into three major ordos. Now, there are a number of other, like, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other ordos. And if you want more detail on that, the best place to look is in the Dark Heresy rulebook and in the different source books, because not only do they talk about the major ordos, the Malleus, Hereticus, and Xenos, but they also talk about other ones like the Ordo Julianus, the Ordo Sephirus, the Ordo blah 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 blah, butchers, bakers, candlestick makers. What we're going to do is we're going to cover the three major ordos, the ordos that when you say Inquisition, this is the default, which Ordo Inquisitor is this. And the first, the real Ordo, is the Ordo Malleus. They deal with the threat beyond. They destroy demonic threats, investigate the nature of the demon. The Ordo came into being after the heresy, and therefore has been part of the Inquisition from the very beginning. It is also accompanied by its chamber militant, the Grey Knights, which are universal super soldiers with the gene seed of the Emperor, who can single-handedly wield storm bolters one-handed while also spinning the entire earth on their finger like a basketball, and then they also break out their cool psychic glaives that make all of the Space Marine fanboys go, "That's not fair!"
And they break the rules of 40K on a daily basis.
They break the rules of 40K every single day. In fact, it's part of their litany. They have to break the rules of 40K every single day, no matter how hard you try.
And they are also chapter 666 for some bloody reason.
Yeah. That's the thing that's killing me, is that like they're the Ordo 666. They were intent, and the thing is this, like, he decided, Malkador, in his wisdom, decided to take the Grey Knights, hide them on a moon in the warp from the warp entities, because this makes sense. And then he's going to take them and slip them into the Imperial roster as the chapters are being formed, to, you know, be like, oh, no, this is the 666th chapter. We haven't gotten that far up yet, but don't worry about that, you know.
He just waited until they got to 665, and then he went, oh, by the way, there's this other one that we made. I know we're on 666, but, you know, forget the symbolism. Just put these guys in.
Right. And then we move on to the Ordo Hereticus. They cover the threat within. They investigate and root out heresy, mutation, rogue psychers from humanity, and they police the ecclesiarchy. The Ordo Hereticus was founded following the events of the Age of Apostasy, which is also where they picked up their militant arm of their order, which is the Sisters of Battle, mainly because the
Adeptus Senoritas.
The Adeptus Senoritas. So says Johnny of a Bravo Company. Anyway, so, and of course this dates back to the fact that the ecclesiarchy was ordered to not have any men under arms, so naturally they took all of the women and put them and gave them guns.
They took a note out of Lord of the Rings book and went, okay, so we can't have men under arms, we can have women under arms.
That's stupid Brits. You're like, oh well, what we'll do is we'll simply make it, I don't know, whatever. Alright, so and the final Ordo is the Order Xenos. The Ordo Xenos. They cover the threat without. They investigate and eliminate alien influence and plots against the Imperium. It's not known when the Ordo Xenos was founded. However, it's believed to be of a similar age to the Ordo Malleus, or so the Ordo Xenos would claim, but whatever. Mm-hmm. Who cares? They're irrelevant. Anyway, the only thing good about them is that they apparently convinced the Space Marine chapters to work together by sending them people.
I love the Ordo Xenos, Chamber Militant, the Death Watch.
Yeah, the Chamber Militant for the Ordo Xenos is, of course, the Death Watch. And they are, like I said, they are Space Marines of multiple different chapters that have each seconded these members to join this brotherhood or whatever, where you proceed
you get the call and you can't say no.
Yeah, exactly. And some of these, they're fulfilling oaths of honor. Some of these, they're fulfilling different different obligations or whatever to the Inquisition. Realistically, what it amounts to is, I mean, now it's cool because what you end up getting, what you end up getting in the Death Watch is you'll get vital information and skills that you would not receive elsewhere. For example, what is it? It's Tychus in Dawn of War 2. The Scout Sergeant. I'm going to say Tychus. If I'm wrong, then
yeah.
By God, we'll look it up on internets. But he started out as... What was it that he started out? He started out as a Blood Raven Scout Sergeant who was seconded to the Death Watch to help fight the Tyranids, and he learned a lot about the Tyranids, and it helps in the events of Dawn of War and Dawn of War 2, because he's also had experience dealing with the Eldar, he's had experience dealing with a number of alien races because of his contact with the Death Watch, you know what I'm saying?
That's right.
So which one is your favorite Ordo?
I do like the Ordo Xenos just because of the Death Watch. Primarily because of the Death Watch game, roleplay game that came out. I absolutely adore that game. It's just amazing. And I do like the idea that, like I say, the Space Marines from the different chapters, they get the call, they get the message come through saying this person must go to the Death Watch now, and there's nothing you can do about it. You can't say no, you can't tell them go fuck themselves, you can't say nothing. You have to go and join the Death Watch for X amount of time or until you're dead. I just love the idea.
Trying to find the stupid... Trying to find his name.
Cyrus,
that's who I'm talking about. Yeah, no, because Tychus is the Space Marine, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, so the role of the Inquisition. Oh gosh, there's a lot of ground to cover with the role of the Inquisition. Basically, here's the deal. There's a lot, because we're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, like 10 paragraphs. The Inquisition exists. We covered this before when we talked about the structure of the Imperium. The Inquisition sits just below the Emperor, because presumably they operate with the Emperor's mandate and directly handed to them from the Emperor, or, depending on which version of the story you go with, potentially handed to them from Malkador the Sigillite, which is close enough to saying the Emperor to matter.
I was going to say, either way, it's high enough, isn't it?
Right, that there is no one higher than those two. Their job is to route out things that will affect the Imperium. Do anything... There is literally nothing beyond the scrutiny of the Inquisition, except for the Emperor himself, which, of course, according to the Imperial dogma, is assumed to be perfect.
There's nothing and no one beyond their reach.
Even other Inquisitors are up for scrutiny exactly. At any given moment. There is no real structure. You'll have some vague structure of, like, junior Inquisitors report to senior Inquisitors, But really, beyond the idea of seniority, there is no real control structure among the Inquisition. Because any system of inquisitorial control would put themselves in some kind of power structure where someone could literally say, don't look into that because I said so. Well, you know, pardon my French, but, you know, at that point, the Inquisitor asks themselves, who the fuck is this guy telling me what I can do? Or, more to the point, if you're sufficiently paranoid, the question is, what is this person hiding?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the important thing. That's the important thing about the Inquisition, is the Inquisition is designed to... They operate under a very simple mandate. If you've got nothing to hide, then it should not bother you to submit yourself, mind, body, and soul, to the Inquisition for testing. You know?
Exactly.
And if you're resisting, then clearly there's a reason. And it needs to be found out why.
Yeah, and no one is above them, not even the High Lords of Terror.
No.
High Lords of Terror, the Adeptus Astartes, the Mechanicus, not a single one of those organizations is beyond the Inquisition.
Yep. And more to the point, with the High Lords, the Admech, the Militarum, the Astra Militarum, the Astartes, the Admech, blah, 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 butchers, bakers, candlestick makers, everyone. If an Inquisitor comes in and says, I need this squad of soldiers, then he has the authority to do that. And there is no one that can stop him. Now, that being said, let's follow this train out. If one Inquisitor goes running around a sector telling everybody to do what he says or else, they will very quickly find that Inquisitor will very quickly find a bullet in the back of his head.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the important
Most
thing
likely
is,
from an assassin.
Right. Or either from another Inquisitor or from a noble that can pay the money or anything. Because here's the deal. They are the Inquisition, which is why I like them to a degree. Every single one of them is the James Bond of the 40K universe. And that's a comparison. That's a comparison I just thought of. So they're the James Bond. They have a license to kill or be killed. They can do whatever, up to and including obliterating a planet with virus bombs to get rid of a cult that they're just convinced is on that planet, even if it's not. Because you cannot let heresy take root. Because here's the deal, and this is Matt the heathen pagan, you know, spreading his dirty heretical ideas, but. In a society that is as calcified as the Imperium, in a society that is so dogmatic and bound to doctrine as the Imperium is, any threat to that stability in the minds of the individuals who are tasked with protecting that system is chaos and anarchy and the gateway to dangerous things. One of the examples that I love about the 40K universe, and it points out that the Inquisition, it sounds like a good thing. Let's keep humanity safe. And we don't care what we have to do to get there, right? One of the missions that you can be sent on in the Dark Heresy role-playing game, particularly in the Ascension expansion, where it covers high-level play, is there's a planetary governor not paying his taxes, his tithes to the Imperium. Now, the reason he's not paying his tithes to the Imperium is that his planet is starving. And none of the High Lords and none of the Administratum will reduce his tithe. So he refuses to pay. So that he can feed his planet. He can feed the people on his planet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And your job is to force the people on that planet to do whatever they have to do to depose the governor or get him out of the way. And the thing is this, like, you'd think if you got the facts that this guy is doing the right thing. He's a good governor to his people, you know?
But that doesn't matter. And that's what I love about these games is that
but that it doesn't forces, matter exactly.
It forces the player to think from a player perspective. I empathize with this guy. I would do the same. But from a character perspective, my character wouldn't do that. My character is held to the imperial philosophy. You know, he has to kill this guy, and it brings up so many moral decisions in the player. It's so funny to watch.
Right, exactly. And that's the, you know, that's the best part of this whole, you know, situation is, okay, so I want to do, and this goes back to point out a critical, I guess, truth in the 41st millennium, in that there is no good guy. Like, the Tau are pretty close, but if, as you read into the Tau, they actively follow brainwashing and, you know, indoctrination and all of these really, really bad things.
Everyone is their own special shade of gray.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, so the Inquisition, it sounds like a really great mandate, but in the process of fulfilling its mandate, it does some pretty horrific shit, you know? So anyway, and this goes back to things as the inquisitorial remit. Like, everyone, there is nothing beyond them, and they can do whatever they want to make it happen, you know? And they do this, they follow this based on their own particular philosophies. And the Inquisition, there are a number of minor, just like we said with the Ordos, you know, there are a number of philosophies, you know, basically there's a philosophy for every emperor, for every inquisitor.
Oh, yeah.
Every inquisitor follows an idea. So the two major trains of thought are Puritanism and Radicalism. Why don't we each make a case? How about we do this? How about we each make a case? One of us pick Puritanism and one of us pick Radicalism.
Yeah.
So okay. which one do you want to? Which one would you like to do? I'm giving you the option.
I shall take Radicalism.
Of course you would. All right. So let me explain to you why you should be a Puritan Inquisitor. That's what we'll do. We'll convince them to be our particular brand of Inquisitor. How's that sound?
Definitely.
Okay. So here's the deal. In the Puritan mindset, let's be clear about one thing. Right from the get-go about Puritanism, we are upholding the Imperium. We are upholding everything that is good and solid about the Imperium. And in order for us to do that, we cannot compromise our beliefs. And we cannot take the easy path. As I have stated on numerous occasions to my stepson, you can do things the right way, or you can do things the fast way. And usually the right way, even though it takes a little longer, the right way will always produce better results. So you should be a Puritan Inquisitor if you believe that cutting corners only runs the risk of tainting yourself. And Puritan Inquisitors should step forward only if they believe that those who use the devil's tools, to quote, I can't remember his name. It's the quote at the beginning of XCOM Enemy Within. Those who use the devil's tools are brought by degrees to wield his sword. And that means that ultimately, if you do use the forces of chaos, you of course become chaos tainted, and therefore you're part of the problem. Anyway, now my counterpart will discuss the radical perspective.
Oh, interesting. Radicalism. Bit of a misnomer, if you ask me. In a galaxy that's hostile to human life and human progress, there are those who have to take the road less traveled, and become that which threatens
threatens the stability of the Imperium. These are the radicals. These are those men and women who have taken it upon themselves to wield the weapons and works of the enemy, of Chaos, of Xenos, and employ them against the enemies of humanity. They are generally quite pragmatic in their outlooks, in their ways, as opposed to the more conservative Puritans. And as much as those Puritans would label radicals as heretics themselves, they tend to be less, what's the word, less worried about getting their hands dirty. They're those who will quite happily go into a cult or onto a planet where a cult is taking root, and they'll employ a demon host that the cult is trying to bring into reality. The demon they're trying to bring into reality, they'll bind this demon into a human host, and quite happily use that against the cult itself to take that apart from the inside. So yes, the become a radical if you believe that the tools of the enemy are there to be used against the enemy, and if you think that, you know, to live by the sword, you die by the sword, and that's something that the radical just accepts.
Nice. Okay. So we'll leave you with that thought to contemplate the path that you would choose. It actually did work out very much that I got to argue the Puritan side, because I tend to prefer Puritanism, which is also weird because, like, to give you an idea, like, Eisenhorn considered himself a Puritan, except for the fact except for the fact that Eisenhorn was himself a psyker. Mm-hmm. And so it's this weird dichotomy wherein, you know, he is very, you know, in a way he's using his psychic powers, which is something that you shouldn't do as a person.
The interesting thing about Eisenhorn is that he runs a gamut between the two philosophies, because at the beginning of his career, like you say, he considered himself a Puritan. At the end of his career, he considered himself a radical, because that's when he started taking on people like Cheddar Bale.
Admittedly, he did. Well, that's the good thing about. That's why, honestly, my favorite study of the Inquisition is the Eisenhorn trilogy. It's really my favorite 40K books, but my favorite study of the Inquisition is the Eisenhorn trilogy, because it's not really that he ever considers himself radical. He just, it's a situation that keeps happening to him where, well, the thing is this, like, he starts Puritan and then, well, he comes across, this demon host, and the problem is the demon host takes an interest in him. You know,
it's true,
and it becomes a matter of, well, I can't get rid of the guy, but I got to do something, you know. So, and it's a slide. Like, he does in fact slide into radicalism, and he is in fact labeled. I think he's, you know, there's things that happen as a result of that. I don't want to spoil the books now, but there are things that happen. He doesn't consider himself a radical, but everyone else starts to consider him a radical.
That's true.
And it's interesting to watch, because the thing is this, like, you know, in his mind, he's doing the right thing. And there's a couple of discussions with a couple of other Inquisitors who they all think they're doing the right thing, too. You know?
It's a very good point.
Well, that's the, you know, talking about the Inquisition. You know, the Inquisition follows that Obi-Wan Kenobi philosophy of, you know, a great deal of the number of truths that you cling to is going to change depending on your point of view. Mm-hmm. You know? So at any rate, speaking of, well, let's touch base real quick. Devotions of the Faithful. We still only have two reviews. I've got to talk to Xander, because he does our RSS posting through iTunes. We got to find out what's going on with that, because I've had
come on, people.
Well, I've had a number of people tell me that they've posted, so it's just a matter of finding out what's going on. And I think it may be a situation where they've got to be released, or I don't know. We'll have to see. As soon as I find out, you guys will find out, because I want to know what you guys think of our show. That being said, it's in the tag at the end of our show, but I'm going to say this now. Like, if you want us to add or change anything, or you want to see how things work out, then do us this favor. Go on, you know, send us an email, voxarcona@gmail.com, or send us a tweet at voxarcona, so that we know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what we can help fix. Because we want to know, we want to be the community's podcast, and in order for us to be the community's podcast, we want to make sure that we're doing what the community thinks needs to happen. So at any rate, we have reached the end of our content for today. It's been a good time talking with you, Darren. Hope to do so next week, too.
Indeed-a-do.
Yeah. So at this point, I will go ahead and sign off for the night. I am Katsu. He is Gigabyte. We are Vox Arcona. And here is our thought for the day.
The guilty and the polluted fight. They deny. They struggle. In my lifetime, I have brought down 9 marked Diabolus. None went quietly. Gregor Eisenhorn.
The Adeptus Terra thanks you for tuning into tonight's broadcast of Vox Arcona, a production of Holosuite Media. Be sure to check our website, iTunes, or Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered Voxcasts and more. You can follow us on Twitter at Vox Arcona, or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to voxarcona@gmail.com. Return next week for yet another communique from the Vox Arcona.